Thank you. Good morning. My name is Cliff Roach, and I'm an alcoholic. And this is a hell of a turnout. It's great. I don't know if you're alcoholics too, probably. I'm not a morning person. Are you? I don't think I ever met an alcoholic who's a morning person. The doctors are having a lot of trouble with my throat. It's a my. And the mornings are the worst, but I'll do the best I can with what I have. Of course, Al and I go back forever to the very beginning. We had the same sponsor, the late Bill Blake, a little electrician there in Oceanside who was a fascist. Probably the meanest man that ever lived, and we needed it, both of us. We were both losers. I was only a loser for 5 years. He was a loser for 10 years. And we got the same sponsor, and we're both still sober today. I hadn't known. They just told me this was a service traditions talk, so that's what I got ready to do. I have some notes. I hardly ever look at them, but makes it look like I prepared. But he brought up central office, and that's the purpose of this thing is for central office. When I gave up the first time in AA, the first time I ever found out anything about AA, I called central office. And a nice guy talked to me there, and an hour later, a guy was knocking on my door, a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous that took me to my first meetings that I didn't like. Although that is when I got sober, that's how I found AA, by calling central office. And I've spent 26 years as a volunteer every Tuesday afternoon in central office there in North County. And so after 26 years, I thought, let's try rotation here. give you guys a chance. And I tell you, there's nothing more satisfactory than being a volunteer in central offices. That's AA. That's where the sick guy calls and the sick lady calls. Says, I don't know what I'm doing. And I think about some guy that's getting kind of lazy in AA, so I call him. And I see that guy at a meeting that night with his newcomer, and it's like he's been rejuvenated. Hey, in AA, great. You got the new guy. And then maybe a year later, I see the one guy giving the other guy a year cake. And I'm part of that on that telephone. I put the two of them together. So that's AA. That's really what AA is all about. And Al, we had a central office in San Diego that was not treating us well up in North County. And so a guy came up to me at the roundup down there and says, we got to have a North County central office. And I was tired of hearing about it, so I said, give me $20. The guy went, what? You want a central office? Give me $20. And he did. So then I went over to Al and said, give me $20 for a central office. Al went, oh, okay. I went over to Skip and said, give me $20. We're going to have a central office. I didn't put a nickel in. this other old guy, and we got sent letters out. We had, at that time, 90 groups in the North County. 89 representatives showed up. 89 out of 90. And so that's how we sent it to Central. I was the first chairman. Al was the first treasurer. What a good idea that was. he needed a car. And so these two losers started a central office. Isn't that something? It's absolutely imperative that you have a central office. And I'll tell you, our central office, we have a paid office employee. We have 650 groups. How many do you have around here? 130. Yeah, we only had 90. So, no, you don't want to pay anybody right now. But we have 650 groups. When we started North County, we had the 90 groups, and we used to get like 60 reps at the meeting. And after a couple of years, it dropped down to, 40. I wrote this nasty letter and sent it out and got it back up to 60 again. Today we have 650 groups in North County, and the average attendance at the intergroup meeting is 34. The concepts were mentioned, And the concepts say nothing should be done in AA without discussion, vote, and substantial unanimity. In my central office, you know, about 1% of the people are making the decisions for everybody. But that's, you know, that's, if there's anything wrong with AA, it's that. It's people sitting on their butts and let somebody else do it. And, you know, as I'll talk about it later anyway, but I wanted to mention central office before I got into this other boring stuff. They're already asleep. I got to be sure I finish on time. When I was new, I thought what I came here for was to not drink anymore. I thought that was it. And after I was here a little while, I realized that without alcohol, I was pretty miserable. I was pretty unhappy. And so I got this little sponsor, Bill Blake. He's dead now, about 20 years in. And he took me everywhere in AA, and he showed me right away that AA is not a meeting in A town, that it's a great, huge fellowship filled with kind of people I wanted to hang around with my whole life. He took me to meetings where everybody was laughing, and that's what keeps me here, is the laughter. I don't know about you. I wasn't laughing when I got here. Were you? Anybody big laughers when you came in? The only way I could laugh, he didn't laugh for like 3 years. You know, we almost laughed. But the only way I could laugh when I got here, because I was slick, I'd go, you know, that's if you fell down and got hurt. And Bill had me up to a meeting in L.A. I was sober about 3 days, and then I went, ha! What was that? What was that? You know, it was like stitches tearing in my stomach, and I've been laughing ever since. And I love the laughter of Alcoholics Anonymous. But when I was new, this old guy, I had a lot of problems. Probably if you're new, you don't have any today. But, I mean, I owed a lot of money, and it was all due. And I was married to this shrew who wouldn't go to Al-Anon and just had this foul mouth. And I had these long-haired drug demon children. You know, I mean, they're all around the house. Hey, that was, you know. And, you know, and I'm newly sober, and God Almighty, I would go to my sponsor's house, and I'd say, you know what they're doing over there now? And I would sob. I'd have these nervous breakdowns and tell them all the troubles I had, and then my sponsor would listen. I found if you make a sound once in a while, they think they're listening. And then I would finally just run down. You know, and he would say, "Go get Al and take him to the meeting." What the hell kind of a cure is that for a nervous breakdown? You know, it's like asking a guy, what time is it? The horse is dead. And you had to know Al then. You know, he was this 10-year loser and the biggest blowhard I'd ever met in my life. And he didn't have any license, of course, to drive. And so I would, you know, the old guy would be looking at me and I'd say, I'd go get Al, and I'd put him in the car, blah, 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 blah. And we would go to the meeting, and we would set the meeting up, you know, put the chairs up, and we'd make the coffee. Everybody'd come to the meeting. Everybody'd go home. Al and I'd sit. And we had real cups in those days. And he was so shaky, he had to wash. He put his hands in the water and just stirred it up, you know. And, but I could dry, shit, you know. And I'd load him in the car, blah, 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 all the way home, and I'd let him off, and I'd start driving home. And on the way home, this feeling would come over me, the kind of feeling I drank for my whole life. It would just start like here, and and just kind of spread out through. It used to scare the hell out of me. It felt so good. I thought it's because I got rid of Al. And then he made me stand at the door and greet people when they came in. God, I hated that because I'm a snob. Hi, how are you tonight? Like I really give a and make the coffee and wash the coffee pots and wash the cups and mop up after you were through. And I don't know what the hell it was all about. I thought it was stupid things the guy was telling me to do. As it turned out, he was introducing me to the concept of service. We have a funny code here. We use the word service to mean love. As long as I'm doing for you. Now, I've heard probably 200 fifth steps in my years in the program. And of all the men I've ever worked with, their number one defect of character was self-obsession, as was mine. When I got here, I was an absolutely, completely self-obsessed person. And that didn't mean I was happy. That just meant that I thought of myself constantly, not well of myself. Do you know what I mean? But I didn't think, never had thought about anybody else in my life. I was locked in this little prison, and I don't know how in the hell I got in there. I know it's before I was 4 years old. I built a wall, I guess, to keep you out. And all I ever did was build a prison to keep me in. And that's where I lived all alone in that prison till I got to you. And Peggy Martin in Nebraska says, alcoholism is the only prison where the locks are on the inside. And our little sponsor said, there's 12 keys to let you out, Cliff. And because you're a brilliant intellectual, we numbered them for you. 1, 2. Well, that's the way he talked to us all the time. We thought the first step was, shut up and get in the car. As it turned out, I'm going 37 and a half years sober. The first step is, just shut up and get in the car. In the back seat on the hump. And there's a method to that, too. I mean, if you're the hump on the back seat, you find a newcomer. Hey, come with us. I was on the window after I got him. And I came to find out that this secret word service that these people here ably talked about, all the different kinds, all will save our lives, everything, you know, whether we're working in the group or whether we're working in H&I and whether we're working in formal service or whether we're working for intergroup, we're doing the secret word service. Do you know that after a little while when I was standing on the door and you came in, I knew your name? And I want to ask you how you were. I cared, you know. And so little by little, I found out that this word service, you know, in our area a number of years ago, Mother Teresa was visiting there, and she had a heart attack. And one of our buddies, a cardiologist, was one of the doctors that took care of her. And he said, you know, you couldn't be in the room with that lady and not know she was a spiritual being. And some reporter asked her a question when she was there, and it was in the paper, her answer, and I cut it out and carried it with me till it just rotted away. And what Mother Teresa said to this reporter who asked her the question, she said, the fruit of faith is love, and the fruit of love is service, and the fruit of service is peace. I will comprehend the word serenity, and I will know peace. And the fruit of service is peace. You know, I was sober almost 2 years. One night I couldn't sleep, and so I was reading the big book. That'll work. not as good as the manual, though. Oh, if you have insomnia, oh, man, you're gone in no time at all. But anyway, I was up about 3 o'clock in the morning, and I was all alone. I'm sober almost 2 years, had read the book at least 6 times, because he always made us, Bill always had us read so many pages a day or so much a day. And so I had read the book 6 times. There it was, 3 o'clock in the morning, and I saw them. At the bottom of page 83 and the top of page 84, I saw the promises. And if you're new here today, there probably aren't very many newcomers, but if you're new or you've been just lying around the program for a year or so, that's why I'm here. I'm here for the promises. I'm not here to not drink. I'm here to know a new freedom and a new happiness. Because my old ideas of freedom and happiness would make you puke. They were sick. My idea of a new freedom and a new happiness is when I see a guy I sponsor giving a cake to a guy that he sponsors. I have a meeting once a month for the guys I sponsor in town there. And, you know, somebody leads the meeting and takes them out of the book, and we just go around the room. But I get to sit there and watch their eyes and remember what they looked like when they got here. You know, I got to watch those guys. I sponsor guys over 33 years, and I got to see the light come on in his eyes. That's a new freedom and a new happiness. It says, I will comprehend the word serenity, and I will know peace. And right in the middle, see, that sneaky Bill Wilson, oh, what a sneak he was. Right in the middle of the promises, he puts, no matter how far down the scale we have gone, we'll see how our experience can benefit others. That feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. Bill Wilson was a grammatist. He loved grammar. And I was an English teacher. I love grammar. And Bill Wilson and I both know that that's not grammatical. It should be these feelings of uselessness and self-pity. Bill Wilson knew exactly what he was writing, didn't he? That feeling of uselessness and self-pity. It's the same emotion. You show me somebody miserable in the program, I'll show you somebody who's not doing jack. We will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. I'm still waiting on that. No, I've only got 37 years. What? Give me a chance. Look around you. The happy people in AA are the people who are active. There's no other way to get around it. You know, you see a person with a big mope on their face, and they're not doing anything. And so Al and I really learned the hard way, you know, the way to be happy is to be active in the program and do service. We're standing, in this room, there's a ghost. His name was Carl Bynum, an old guy. Remember, how many of you knew Carl? Ooh, and he's dead. He's been dead quite a while. But he would. Really? Oh, what I loved is, I thought, somebody had told me, I'm sorry. Tell him I thought he was dead. Oh, he really was a service structure. He fought like a tiger. He write these letters to general service officers, drove him crazy. But boy, I mean, he loved service. And so, you know, I was hoping, you know, I was thinking he was had passed on, by God. But the last time I did a service talk here, he was here. I remember that one because we were trying to land over here and it was foggy and we couldn't. Remember you left us at the airport? But, you know, I think a lot of us forget that AA is not very old. You know, it's like 71 years old. Two guys 71 years ago, and now there's almost 3 million sober members of Alcoholics Anonymous in 193 countries all around the world. You know, we get real cocky because we're so big now, and we seem so strong and seem so impregnable, but You know, there have been other organizations that worked on alcoholism, and they're all gone now. And Bill Wilson said, if we die, it'll be because from the inside. It won't be anything from the outside that'll hurt us. The only thing that can hurt us is apathy. The only thing, you know, is let somebody else do it. The only thing that'll kill us is that there aren't enough people that care about service. I'm only 37 years sober, but I knew personally guys who were in the very first group in Los Angeles. I knew them personally. Cliff Walker was a guy who was the first delegate in the first panel ever in Southern California, and he got me into service. And all these guys. There was a meeting in 1975, remember, Al? We all went up, and everybody on the program had more than 30 years in 1975. They were the original members. And the guy who led the very first meeting in Los Angeles was telling us about it, and he said he didn't know what the hell to do. It was the first meeting they ever had. And so he said, I seem to be without direction at the time. So he said, why don't we read part of the book that says Into Action? Why don't we read part of chapter 5? And that's where they read the first time. Now they read chapter 5 all over the world. And the guy said, I didn't have any direction at the time. And so, you know, these guys were standing on their shoulders. My daughter and I talked back in Akron, Ohio at the big deal they have back there, and I got to go to the hotel where Bill, and this lady showed us around. She said, here's where Bill was standing when he heard the tinkling of the glasses, and here's the telephone where he called to get Bob, and she took us to the carriage house where they met. My daughter and I got to go in there, and I'll tell you, I felt Bill and Bob in that room. And you know, in the Reflections magazine, I think it's August the 20th, there's one of the readings where he talks about the bonding in Alcoholics Anonymous, about how we bond with one another, like in this room today, and then how we bond with those guys who went before us, Bill and Bob, all these old guys, Carl Bynum and all these guys. And the guy says in this thing, and with babies yet unborn. That's why I'm here this morning. I'm here so that when AA, when my grandkids need AA, they'll have it. And I want it to be AA. You know, back, Al and the other guys were real busy in other stuff when I first got into service. And I was the GSR and the DCM. I did the whole damn alphabet. And, you know, and was the treasurer. I ended up being the delegate in panel 26, which was just before the Ice Age. My sponsor, Bill, was panel 18. His wife, Margie, was panel 22. And so it's kind of in our family, so to speak. But these guys used to kid me, Pat and Al and these guys. They'd say, here comes the AA politician. How's the politics up there, Cliff? You know, they're only kidding, and I loved them. But I used to say to these guys, we're talking 30 years ago now, I used to say, I'm doing this because I want AA to be here for my kids if they need it. And I don't want it to be some watered-down, psychologized BS. I want it to be the program of action that a little electrician gave to me. I want it to be AA. And here it is 30 years later. My youngest son has 19 years in the program. My middle daughter has 6 years in the program. My eldest son, the hashish salesman, he has 6 years in the program. And so when they got here, AA was here for them. And my eldest son, David, is a GSR. And my middle daughter, Jan, is a GSR. Because we got a couple of grandsons coming along here. In our family, it's a dominant gene. You know, a little blue gene down at the end of the chromosome going, hey, one more. I'm on the wrong page here. Let me turn this over. So I'm only a second generation member of Alcoholics Anonymous. A lot of you are third and even fourth generation. But people like Al and I, we knew the original members. And so this thing is very, very precious to us. And a lot of things are precious to us through a lot of people nowadays that are not precious to them. It's an oral tradition. If AA dies, it'll be because of the lack of one word. And the word is sponsorship. Any area that I look around in AA today and I see weakness and disillusion, it's because of lack of sponsorship. Strong sponsorship. Now, that doesn't mean fascist sponsorship. That means strong. It means somebody who cares enough about you to say, hey, stop doing that. And hey, get your butt over there and help there. You know? And so, you know, and I don't care whether it's H&I or whether it's local or whether it's the group itself. If you look around and you see a problem, it's because of lack of sponsorship. And that's usually laziness on the part of the person doing the sponsoring. Oh, thank God I have all these guys to boss around. I'd die. I would die without them. Okay. Ooh. Time flies when you're having fun. Speak for yourself, Charlie. There's really two, we're talking about the traditions. And everything we do in intergroup, not in intergroup, at the area assembly, and everywhere up or down, whatever way you want to put it, everything we're doing is protecting these traditions. Because without the traditions, we wouldn't last 5 years. The traditions are a record of the mistakes we made in AA that our forefathers. Oh, God, if you don't believe it, go to the central office in New York and go in the archives and read the very early stuff about AA. They screwed it up every way you can possibly. You know, there was in the Cleveland Plain Dealer, it says, the founder of AA is visiting Cleveland, Bill W. Then there's a half a page picture of him. You know, everybody heard of Lillian Roth, the movie actress and singer who joined AA and wrote a book about it, I'll Cry Tomorrow, and then stayed sober 5 years and died drunk and took probably 10,000 people with her. So every tradition we have is because of some stupid mistake our forefathers made ahead of us. And I love that. I love the idea of Bill and Bob being just drunken boobs like me. You know, they weren't in white coats up in a mountain floating around. They were just dippy AAs like myself. And, you know, somebody talked about it today, about screwing it up here. When we were new, our sponsor, Bill, if he led a meeting, he'd forget to have chapter 5 read. You know, he'd introduce a person by the wrong name. And we'd be going, oh, God, we'd be so embarrassed for him. People loved it. I found out the more you screw up an AA, the better they like you. You know what I mean? If you just bungle it, they're like, yay! And so, but we used to just die for him. I don't know why I thought it. God, I'm thinking of all kinds of crazy things today. When Bill Wilson died, we had a meeting, a memorial meeting for him down in San Diego. And all the old time, they were supposed to talk 5 minutes. Yeah. And there was a guy, Bill, Jim Burwell. He was the one that made him put As God As You Understand Him in the book. He was very, very frail. He had emphysema really bad. And he and I were backstage helping people. And so we had to help him. Alan got on one side and I got on the other. There were only two steps. And then I walked him out to the podium. He saw the microphone. Hi, I'm Jim Burwell. I'm an alcoholic. And he did a talk about Bill, and then he went, Put a microphone in front of an alcoholic, they have instant recovery. There's two basic underlying principles that underline all the traditions. And so, one of these two principles applies to one or two or three or four or five or all of the traditions, and the other one applies. But these two principles apply to all 12 traditions, and it's very important that you understand, that I understand, these two basic underlying principles. And the first principle is this. It's one drunk talking to another. That's all we have. That's us. The greatest cure for the disease of alcoholism the world has ever known, more successful than all the hospitals and all the treatment centers and all the psychiatrists and all the psychologists lumped together, wouldn't make a pimple on our foot or any portion of our anatomy. We are by far the most successful treatment of alcoholism in the history of the world. And the secret is, it's one drunk talking to another drunk in the front seat of a car on the way to a meeting. Everybody in this room is sober because somebody took the moment or took weeks or whatever it happened, what it took, to make sure we knew where that book was and that we read that book and we understood those steps and took those steps. Every one of us is a result of one person talking to you. It's magic. And it can't lose, you know what I mean? You can't lose. You go on a 12-step call and the guy gets sober and you get to see him change. That's wonderful. Or you go on a 12-step call and the guy tells you to go to hell. And you watch him die. You know, I did a 12-step call many, many years ago, and a guy's lying on the couch, his liver sticking out to here, and he's all yellow. And his daughter asked me, it's a cold 12-step call. His daughter asked me to go, so I went. And he said to me, well, AA is for people that are weak. He's just a crutch. You know, I'm a Marine. And I said, your liver's out to here. What the hell are you talking about? You are a yellow color. You are going to die if you don't get sober. And he said, ah, get out, you know. And I went to his funeral about a month and a half later. And his little boy, who was the same age as my little boy, who was sitting next to me, my little 10-year-old. And little JJ went and looked in the coffin, and my little boy was sitting beside. That man kept me sober for 10 years. Every time I think, hey, hey, is that all there is? I would see that little boy looking in the coffin. Then 20 years after that, I sponsored JJ, the little boy. And, you know, that 12-step call did for me. And not to speak of all the ones who were successful. When I was still drinking, I had a book I was using as a coaster. It was not an AA book. It was a book by a Trappist monk named Cheryl Van, who lived in England. Name of the book was The Heart of Man. But anyway, one day I'm drinking, I pick it up and I read it. And I'm only going to paraphrase what Cheryl Van said, though. In the book he said, I am part of every man who ever lived. And every man who lives after me, however infinitesimally, will be a part of me. And every action I take affects the balance of good and evil in the world. And if the world sins, I am responsible. I threw that goddamn book. It hit three walls before it stopped, you know. Man, I wouldn't even use it for a coaster after that. And boy, I didn't want to hear that. But you know, in AA, we have such instant gratification, don't we? You know, you do a 12-step call on a guy and you look in his eyes, you sit in his room and his eyes are all empty and vacant. And you take him to a meeting and you go to a coffee shop after the meeting, you look across the table and the power's in his eyes. And we got to watch that happen hundreds and hundreds of times. We used to do the good guy, bad guy. We'd almost get in fist fights out in front. It's my turn to be the good guy. No, you did it last time. And we'd do four or five a week, you know. We'd go in there, and one guy'd say, "You gonna shut your mouth, quit your whining, get your butt to the meeting." And the other guy'd say, "Never mind him. Come here, I want to." Oh God, is it, you know? And that's one of the hardest things today in AA. There really aren't that many 12-step calls. But the magic always is that both people benefit. And if you happen to be working in central office, you get to benefit too because you remember putting them together. That's what this thing is all about. So, and of all the traditions, one drunk talking to another, the first tradition, I'm the small part of a great whole. But if I don't do my part, AA will die. Tradition 3 includes all who wish to recover. When I go on a 12-step call, I don't care whether what he does, what he is, how many crimes he's committed, you know, whether she just burned the toast and wants to come to AA, you know. And the third tradition, Al read the long form. Because if you read the short tradition, it sounds real, you know. You will keep out. You know? But the long form says, we don't want to keep anybody out. You know, we want you here. We're in, you know, the old thing says, they called me a rebel and a thing to flout. They drew a circle and shut me out. But love and I, we knew the way to win. We drew a circle and shut them in. We don't want to keep anybody out. When I get a guy who's an addict and an alcoholic, I just take him to a meeting, you know, and for a while he becomes an alcoholic and an addict. Then in another year, I'm an alcoholic. Lanny says, I had a $1,000 a day cocaine habit, but all I can afford today is to be an alcoholic. But we only have one requirement for membership. We only have one. Did you ever join anything in your life that only had one requirement? Most of them have financial requirements, moral requirements, dress requirements. You know what I mean? We only have one, a desire to stop drinking. And we don't care what else. You could be madly in love with a sheep in Montana, but that has nothing to do with it. But if you don't drink, then you don't belong here. We only have the one requirement, but it's a stern one. Okay. And then tradition 4, we're not responsible to any authority. Nobody can tell us how to do a 12-step call. Nobody can tell us how to run our meeting. You know what I mean? No, there are no big shots. And then, of course, number 5 is there's only one primary purpose for a group, and that's it. Got the newcomer. That's to do one-on-one. That's what it's all about. 6, no money or authority. 7, we're self-supporting through our own contributions. Are you aware, you know, that people have left Alcoholics Anonymous millions of dollars, and we won't take it? We spend money to hire lawyers to keep them from giving us the money. That's step 2 all over again. But boy, we're right. Self-supporting is the only way to go. Nobody can tell us anything. We're non-professional, or are we? You can tell from this meeting we're non-professional. A little authority is possible. Our leaders are but twisted servants. We stay away from controversy. Oh, we used to go to L.A. every week. And Al and these other 4 guys, they were all Nazis. They all had real red necks. And my politics was blow it up or burn it down. I didn't really care which, you know what I mean? Man, I was to the left of Mao Zedong. And we would get in these vicious arguments in the car, screaming and yelling at your politics. Bill, our sponsor, pulled over one day and says, "Nobody talks politics in this car, ever, never. Nobody talks politics." We all went, "Yeah, okay. But we would drive through San Clemente every week, and the president was Nixon. There was a big sign that said, "Home of President Nixon." And as we went by, they'd all look at each other in the car, and they'd all go. And I'd come unglued and start screaming and yelling. They'll say, "Shut up, Cliff, what's the matter with you?" You know? So we leave politics out of AA for a very good reason. You know what I mean? And 9, 10, no controversy. 11, you know, we just carry the message. We don't go hunting for people. We don't put billboards up and say, come to AA, or and that kind of thing. We do public service, let people know we're here. And then, of course, the anonymity part of it. If you're new and I'm working with you, you can be anonymous as long as you want to be. And so that's first underlying principle. Every tradition was written to protect the one thing we do better than, it's the only thing we do. I have one drunk talking to another to help them get sober. And the second basic underlying tradition is that we're not God. I'm not God and you're not God. And we proved that most of our lives, most of us. We did a job doing that, huh? The guy wrote a great history of AA. And that's the name he gave the book, Not God. Arthur Kurtz, K-U-R-T-Z. Now, it's not conference approved, but as far as I'm concerned, it's the best history of AA I ever read, because he goes into all the cultural and psychological and philosophical background that helped form Bill Wilson. If you ever went to Bill Wilson's house, which I have, the whole upstairs is just wall-to-wall books, and books on psychiatry and books on philosophy and books on New Age books. The man was a vociferous reader. And so, you can see it in the big book, the influence of all the other stuff he had. But Arthur Kurtz named the book Not God because he saw that Bill and Bob knew that they were just regular guys, that they were just goofy alcoholics like the rest of it. So they set this thing up so that we couldn't kill it by trying to make judgments for each other. There was another past delegate here, at least one, probably more than one. One of the things that got me the first year I was delegate is that at the conference, they never do on anything until it has what they call substantial unanimity, which means damn near everybody. See, I've taught parliamentary law at the college level, so I know about parliamentary law. If you get 2/3 of the vote, shut up. You know, it's all over, pal, if I have 2/3 of the vote. And so at the conference here, they'd have like 3/4 of the vote, but they wouldn't do anything. Oh, tell Leroy, get up and talk again. I said, kill the sucker, it's what I want to do. But they, you know, and actually, if it's not substantial unanimity, they put it off till next year. No big deal. I heard 100 times. There are no problems. There are no emergencies in AA. AAs have emergencies, but Alcoholics Anonymous doesn't have emergencies. We can wait. We don't, you know. Now, I'm telling you about my group. There's 650 groups in my area and 32 reps. Where's the substantial unanimity there, huh? If there's any weakness, it's right there. Substantial. Now, how many of you have been in a meeting where they argue about something and they get one more vote than half? We won. Shut up. That's not the way. Well, you know about that group. We don't do it that way in A. You have to have substantial unanimity. We can't make decisions for each other. That's why our leaders are but twisted servants. They only govern. They don't govern. They just do as we wish. And so that underlying principle of we're not God, first tradition, I'm only a small part of a great whole. The second tradition says there's only one authority, a loving God as he may express himself in our group conscience. What group conscience? This bunch here today, we're a group conscience. Your home group's a group conscience. There's only four of us. That group has a group conscience. The area assembly is a group conscience. The intergroup meeting is a group conscience. The conference itself is a group conscience. And at the conference level, after we hash over something for 39 days, we come out with the idea it's an advisory action. And that's all it says. It's an advisory. We advise you to do this. Thanks, pal. Okay. So, But that higher power has to appear in each one of those groups, and does. You know, if we keep an open mind and we talk with each other and reason it out and we vote on something, the higher power is there. The higher power has never let this organization down yet. Number three is we can't keep anyone out. In other words, I can't decide whether you deserve AA. I can decide whether I don't want to sponsor you anymore, but that's about as far as it goes, and you'd probably be glad of that too. But you know, sponsorship doesn't really enter into this. In the first place, the guys that wrote the book, they were only sober 2 years. What, they didn't know about sponsorship. Sponsorship is something that's grown in the program, and it's wonderful, I think. I think some people misuse it, but it's still, you know, a really great thing. But sponsorship, see, if say, for instance, Al wants me to sponsor him, he comes up to me and says, Cliff, I'd like you to sponsor me. So we get together and we decide, okay, he's in charge. If ever it comes to a point and I say, I want you to do this, he says, you're fired. So much for that. And that's the beauty of sponsorship. The person being sponsored is doing it with his permission and his permission only. And so we can't keep anyone out of AA. I can't decide. Now, we can take people out of a meeting. Those old timers, remember, we used to always have drunken meetings. That was always a good example. Hey, I want to say something. You know, and if you know, if a drunk comes into a meeting nowadays, it's like throwing a fox in a hen house, isn't it? That is what old bag said to me. Why did you bring him here? I don't know, just a whim, I guess. Where would you suggest I take him, to church? The group is a spiritual entity in number four. And then, of course, we're non-professional. That eliminates a lot of the stuff we're talking about. What is that? I always say an alcoholic expert is a guy with a PhD who's still drinking. I'm sorry, is there one here? And then number nine says we least in the least possible organization. 10 says we can't blow our own horn. And, of course, 11 and 12 talk about the spirit of anonymity and about how where we stand really in the universe. And so those two underlying principles underline one, you know, some of them apply to both of them. And so the principle of one drunk talking to another and the principle of that I'm not God. And that's what underlies all the traditions. I got about 2 minutes here. I wouldn't want to go over time. Some of you have several blocks to go home. The biggest threat to this program, I think, and you wouldn't have probably thought I was going to say this, the biggest threat to this program is self-obsession. People come in this program and want to do it their way. And have you noticed, I don't know, maybe it's different here. Have you noticed the rudeness in meetings? Have you noticed the people getting up and walking around in a meeting, a speaker meeting? Or have you noticed the people interrupting one another? Have you heard the foul, horrible language from girls? You know, have you seen the decrease? You know, the lack of discipline. From, you know, where people just give each other space. To me, that's what's hurt the most. There's a little gal wrote a thing in the Grapevine a few years ago. She was only 25. She got sober when she was 17. She's in the Air Force, so she's been all over the world. And she says, I can walk in a meeting and know exactly whether it's a meeting that goes by the traditions or a meeting that doesn't. Can't you? I can walk in a meeting and say, oh, yeah, this is a meeting that believes in the traditions. There's courtesy, number one. Maybe the traditions are just about courtesy. Maybe that's all. But also, newcomers are being taken care of. And old-timers are respected. And the traditions are being followed. And protocol is being followed, and people are staying sober, and people are having a good time. In the other group, you'll see there's rudeness all over the place, and if a newcomer in, they wouldn't know them if they fell over them. And there aren't any old-timers because they got driven away. you know? And nobody stays sober, and the group usually dies off too. Haven't you known that? They're going to start this hot group over there. Pretty soon they're gone. And so that's the biggest one. But, of course, treatment centers have been a problem to us, you know. They send people that, you know, they bring addicts to us and everything else. Clancy says all the problems started because there was a treatment center that only had one van. Take them all day, hey, what the hell? And it might be true. And a lot of, one of the things that bothers me is I might as well accept it because it's a change that I don't like. Now, they say alcoholics don't like change. I'd love change. I just don't like change I don't like. And it's this chanting at meetings. And that comes from treatment centers. You know, you can't let the guy read chapter 5 if you have to help him at the end. God could and would, it's all. Well, that's self-obsession. That's getting ready to do my thing. You know what I mean? And then, of course, everybody's got to make a circle after a meeting. I don't give a damn. There's 400,000 people. You got to make a circle. And I always call that the ballet of ineptitude. But I'm old, and so things bother me. And then, of course, the thing of people, addicts want to talk about things that don't belong in AA. But I found that if you just be kind and wait a little while, then it'll work out. The spirit of sacrifice, Bill talked about it all the time. This business of being willing to submit what I want for the good of others. What I learned by standing at the door and greeting people and driving Al to meetings. Giving of myself and getting out of my own way and letting you be what you are. And that's where the happiness has come. The spirit of sacrifice. Now, the people who set this meeting up today and the people who did all the work this morning, they know what I'm talking about, you know. And the guys that, you know, got out and stirred up the crowd and got everybody here, these people that are doing their thing in AA, they know exactly what I'm talking about. And if you want to be a part of it, talk to one of them. Bill said in 1955, when we finally adopted these traditions and the concept, and we took over AA, it's ours now. And the man that thought of it, and the man who stayed sober all by himself for a year, trying to carry the message, and then found Dr. Bob and nourished his program and wrote the books and wrote the pamphlets and single-handedly spent his life going from he and Bob to about 7, 8, 9, 30,000 in 1955. He stood at the back of the auditorium, and he wasn't in charge anymore. And he said to himself, AA, may it always be safe, even from me. And so when we come to any of these kind of things, whether it be an intergroup meeting or an assembly meeting, anything that has to do with the future of AA, I hope we say that prayer in our heads just before we start. AA, may it always be safe, even from me. Thanks.